Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Everybody, and welcome to Onceable episode 98. We're getting close to episode 100 and we have no idea what we're gonna do about it. Tonight we're gonna talk about season 6 episode 5 Street Rats, and I am joined by Karen, Laura, and Kristen, and I'm Brittany because I never introduce myself. How is everybody doing?
Good.
Not too shabby.
All right. If you want to talk to us about Once Upon a Time, or vote in our polls, or yell at me for putting ships in polls, you can contact us on Twitter at Onceable, or you can comment on this post on hypeable.com. If you're not into ship wars, stay away from the Captain Swan poll post, because those comments are, yeah, that was a mistake on my part. I engaged, and it's my own fault.
Oops.
Yeah.
I engaged
on both sides equally, and then it turned into a mess, and there's paragraphs and paragraphs.
And this is how we can't have
read
nice
that article,
things.
By the way, I read that article. I thought you did a fantastic job taking the good and bad for that ship in equal measure. So yeah. I'm behind you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Because when I wrote, as everyone who listens to this podcast knows, when I wrote the Rumbel one, my good was like a paragraph and my bad was like a rant. And this one, I gave 300 words to each. So I feel like I really tried to level the playing field for Captain Swan, because it is a popular ship, and I do like it, so I really wanted to see the other side of it. But, yeah, it doesn't matter.
Hell hath no fury like shippers scorn. Do you not know this?
Oh. You know, I knew it from a very far away place, and I went in, and I'm clawing my way out again. So, we'll see. Let's talk about Street Rats, and let's start with thumbs up, thumbs down. And let's go with Karen.
That is an excellent question. It's not a thumbs down. I feel like if I'm this hesitant about it, it's got to be a thumb sideways. I definitely didn't mind the episode. There were highlights. Some of it just I didn't feel particular attachment to. I really liked Jasmine. I thought she was pretty badass, actually. And I'm glad that Emma's secret is now out in the open. That was a relief, even though it was annoying, especially given the end of the episode. And of course, the tied to Greek mythology always gives it, you know, a couple more points in my book. But yeah, it didn't pack a huge punch, so I'm just going to give it a thumb sideways.
And how about you, Kristen?
For me, it's a thumbs up for many of the reasons that Karen just stipulated. Mostly because Emma's secret's out in the open, and that is a huge relief. It's like, come on, we've been waiting for you to just fess up already. And I also was really glad that they found a way to separate the savior from their like future, like from their saviorness, without it being like contrived. Like, I thought this was a really organic way for them to like cut ties. So I thought that was really cool.
And Laura?
I guess I'm sort of thumb sideways about it. Didn't love it, didn't hate it. It was okay. It wasn't my favorite, wasn't horrible. I was just like, meh, all right. I just want this whole Zelina Regina thing to just pick up pace and be whatever it's trying to be a little quicker. I'm not quite sure what's going on with that. And I'm also starting to get a little bored with the Emma and the Shaky thing. Like, I don't know. I'm sort of like meh about that too.
Yeah, I'm also going to go thumb sideways this week, mainly because of the Aladdin storyline. I think that really dragged the episode down in flashback form. I feel like the flashbacks really didn't give us anything for the amount of time that we spent there. They just felt like clever nods and, you know, like Once Upon a Time does that like wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Remember this from the movie? We got it now here with bad CGI. And I never appreciate that as much as I do the storylines when they change things. So we had a lot of that, and I loved all the inclusion of the savior mythology and how Aladdin got out of that, and I liked Jasmine far removed from Agrabah, but when we were in Agrabah, I was not into it as much. Let's jump into some favorite quotes and start with Karen.
When Aladdin comes in on the magic carpet and he saves Jasmine and he just goes, "Was the magic carpet too much?" I don't know why it was so funny. It was just the way that he delivered it, but also like, yeah, buddy, it was kind of too much.
And Kristen, you also have an Aladdin related quote.
Yes, mine's between Shireen and Emma in the forest toward the beginning of the episode. And Shireen says, "She was helping me find a man who I cared about a long time ago." And Emma goes, "Aladdin?" Shireen goes, "You know him?" And Emma says, "No, I just saw the movie. It's a This World thing." Love it.
She sort of has a prepared answer for any time she talks about a movie with someone now, because she like had to use that with Hook so many times. "You don't have the curly hair that I thought you would have," or like, "That's not how it happens." She says it so many times that
it's a This World thing.
I laughed at it too, because I was just like, oh, I wish they would do that like more. Like every now and then they meet somebody and you're like, "What, you missed that movie?" Clearly they didn't know the people from Frozen. So I do kind of like how the movie thing seems to like skip around. Like Emma wasn't at the cinema that week. So I laughed at it because it's just kind of like how it's inconsistent that she's seen the movies and recognized iconic people or not.
Yeah, and there are no little children in Storybrooke, so Let It Go did not permeate the magic wall so that they couldn't get it out of their heads. Laura, let's go with you and change gears a bit to a Regina quote.
Yeah, it wasn't like really a funny haha quote, but it was one that made me slightly chuckle, is when they were talking about Emma and this vision that she's having, and Regina just says, "Well, where do you think I am? Dead? Or am I the figure under the hood?" I just kind of liked Regina being like, "Man, why can't I catch a break?" I laughed. For me, it was funny. It's kind of perverse funny, but it was like dark humor funny.
It was the way she said that one, though, because she was like, "Of course you guys," like she wasn't even mad at them for thinking it. She was just mad at the fact that like, man, that could actually be true.
Right. It was great, but it was just like, "Oh, come on, not again." Like, I don't know. I loved it. I thought it was fun.
That was great. And then she sort of like skulks off to her vault. She's like, "I'm just going to go back to work."
Really? Under the freaking hood. Like, yeah, I don't know. I thought it was just kind of funny.
I also took a Regina quote, and this happens in that scene where Regina and Zelina are at the spa in their lovely head wraps, and they're gossiping at the beginning of the scene, and Regina, or the evil queen, I should say, says, "Have you seen Gold's new haircut? He's looking good, isn't he? That man needed to get away from that blubbering bookworm." And then Zelina sort of pauses, and she's like, "Have you and the Dark One ever?" And she says no, but it was just really cool to see them take a step back and have that sort of playful conversation before the evil queen like lays it on thick and goes, "You know, I appreciate your wickedness." And we have to hear that all over again. So that little moment brightened up what was about to be another rehash conversation. Let's talk about Aladdin and Jasmine, because I really want to know what you guys thought of how Once Upon a Time chose to incorporate them. They're going to be sticking around for a little bit, and this was just their introduction episode, so we had to cover a lot of background. And just what did you guys think in general of the flashbacks, particularly how Aladdin and Jasmine met, what the origin of the Savior story is, and just an overall sense of, you know, the threat to Agrabah and what's going on there.
Can I just tell you, I was totally distracted the entire time by Aladdin's accent.
Yes, me like, too.
Wildly, horrendously distracted by, was it Australian or Cockney or what? I was like, what?
I felt like it changed. I was like, is he Scottish?
Just incredibly, and I remember tweeting about it on Saturday. I'm like, I am so freaking distracted by his accent. And I think why I found it even more distracting is because at points it was very, very similar to Michael Socha's accent that he used when he was in Wonderland, and obviously the tie-in that that had with the Aladdin story. And I was just like, I don't know, discombobulated the entire time. The accent really, really bothered me.
I felt the same way. I was like, man, I really miss Will. The whole time, I just kept thinking about him going, man, I wish they'd bring him back.
Right. And the whole time I also just kept going, you know, may the retconning continue, because it just, I don't know, I had a really, really hard time with it. I mean, I guess we're now done with the Aladdin storyline, so we don't have to think about it again. But I mean, I was even sitting there with the Jafar costume going, oh, recycled that prop, did we? Like, it was just, I don't know, I found the whole thing very, just very, very distracting, unfortunately.
Meanwhile, I was distracted by the apples in the middle of the desert. I was like, would they really have apples? It always bugged me in the Disney movie, too, because I was like, would they really, in that time and that day, would they really have been able to get apples there still fresh? Come on. And that apple crunched when he bit into it anyway. It was a thing that bugged me. Other than that, I really liked that in this retelling, Jasmine was a way more proactive. Like, in the movie, she leaves because she doesn't want to get married and she wants to see outside the castle. Here, she has, like, a purpose. She wants to help people. She knows what's going on with Jafar. She's trying to find a solution and leaves to find help. Like, I like that she has a little more purpose in this one.
I definitely agree. And I was a little confused because I don't know if any of you remember this, but I feel like at the end of last week's episode, Jasmine was saying how she, and when she was talking to the Oracle, she and Aladdin have some unfinished business, and it seemed like it was a bad thing. And yet, when they reunited this week, she was just like, I need the help of the Savior. And I felt like very, like, there was a disconnect in what I was supposed to be thinking about in terms of Aladdin and Jasmine's relationship. Because I think I remember writing last week being like, I'm interested to see these two be enemies. But now I feel like either she's playing him and she's like, I know some, she was happy that he was alive, but also is she going to hold the fact that she knew he was a coward over his head, or was he actually being a coward? That's another question we could ask. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the vibe is between the two of them yet. I know they only reunited for a second, and he said he has more to tell her about what actually happened. There is a huge gap in those years where how did Jasmine get to the Land of Untold Stories? And still, I know we're not supposed to talk about Wonderland, but I'm still trying to fit Wonderland into this.
Yeah, it's becoming very hard. It's like really distracting to pretend that like it didn't exist. Now, I guess there are a large chunk of people maybe who never saw the series, so they don't have the same issue that we do. But it definitely, I know I personally find it very distracting.
Was the Sultan that guy in the cage in Wonderland?
I don't know.
I'm trying to remember.
And I have to say, I mean, what stuck out for me in the Wonderland was very much Aladdin, the Michael Socha character, Alice, and Jafar. Like, that's what, honestly, I remember the most. And then the Anastasia, who, like, I couldn't stand. But, like, that's all I kind of remember intensely were those characters. They were very big, pronounced characters. I don't remember the plot line as much. So, I don't know. I think that's probably why I have more of a problem with it.
Yes, I looked it up in the wiki, and they did list the Sultan of Agrabah as one of Jafar's prisoners in the cage. So I think he was meant to have been there.
Okay, yeah. And Aladdin isn't in Wonderland, right? It was just the genie. That guy was Cyrus.
Right, sorry, not Aladdin himself, the genie.
No, because I made that mistake earlier this season when they were casting Aladdin. I was like, my first thought was, oh, they're recasting Aladdin, forgetting that the other actor played Cyrus, who was the genie. I don't know why Wonderland even happened. It's a big question I have for Eddie and Adam, if I ever get the chance to meet them. But let's talk a little bit about Jasmine, because I do like the fact that you guys love her badassness and that she's a very proactive princess, because I think that is going to be a great trait for her to have to get along with Snow, for example, because, you know, you have that princess who was very proactive in her kingdom and wants to stop evil. And that's going to feed right into, you know, working well with these people and doing what needs to be done.
Well, I found it kind of interesting that in the beginning of the episode, they find for the seer or whatever we call her, the Oracle. We find her dead. Jasmine runs past and they just arrest her and put her in prison.
Mm.
Like, I was like, is that really a thing we do now? Like, we just assume if you're in the area, you're guilty. We're going to take you in and then we'll talk to you. Like, it kind of bugged me. I was like, why wouldn't they just talk to her? I mean, maybe they wanted to get out of the forest for the day. I don't know. It just kind of bugged me. I was like, we've been through this again and again. Like, usually, you know, just talk to the person. I'm sure they probably aren't guilty. Guilty parties don't usually stick around.
Yeah, and she really looked like she was bothered by the fact that the woman was lying there dead.
Yeah, and she was, like, in all white, and, like, it was like, she does not scream guilty party to me, just in any way, shape, or form. So it kind of bugged me.
I do want to get to this other point about someone else hiding out in the woods of Storybrook for X amount of years going unnoticed. But in order to get there, we have to talk about Karen's favorite thing, Greek mythology. It is introduced. I actually messaged Karen while I was watching it, and all I said was, are you watching this live? Because I just wanted to talk about the Fates. So it was the only thing I wanted to talk about. So the Fates come in this storyline and not the Underworld storyline because they are scissors. Work to sever someone from their fate, for lack of a better word. And so Jafar knows, or is in possession of these scissors, and he offers them to Aladdin after Jasmine exposes the fact that Aladdin is the savior. He's always had this power within him, and really, the title of the savior brings about the power once you know you're the savior. Like, it's not like some incredible, like, you know, you're struck by lightning or something, and that's how you're the savior, or whatnot. You just can go along being the savior, and then you recognize it when someone's like, hey, you're the savior, try some light magic. So now Aladdin is aware of this great responsibility, and he's going to be the one to save Agrabah. And it was very reminiscent of Emma's introduction to being the savior, where Henry comes in and he's like, hey, yeah, you're the one who's going to come and you're going to save my family, and then you're going to get to meet all these cool characters from stories that you've heard your whole life.
You know, it was kind of interesting because in looking at that, for me, it still really bugs me, this whole idea that the savior, it keeps negating, like, free will and free choice and the power of your actions. Like, to me, I feel like we're in some kind of weird Puritan Jonathan Edwards predestination loop here, that you're always going to be evil, you're always going to be the savior, the saviors are all going to die. Like, to me, it starts to get very boring if this is what we're going to say, because then there's no point in watching the show, because Rumpel will always be evil, Regina will always be evil, Emma will always be good, but now the rule apparently is that all saviors have to die. I'm not sure that I like this sort of very black and white, this is the little cookie cutter character that you fit into. And I'm having a hard time with that personally.
I really like that point, because it sort of really pigeonholes these characters and doesn't leave a lot of room for the stories to move around. We saw this with the Dark One whole season. All last season, they had a great opportunity to set up this Dark One and the ability to change and the ability to come out of things. But I feel like they tiptoe so close to the line but they never cross it. They never give you a way out. Everybody always comes back 20 steps. Like, they get so close, and then they never complete the story. They always are starting over, and now they're literally rehashing the same exact story about the savior in order to progress it. But first, we got to go back 20 steps before we can actually get an answer about the savior. I do like some of the character work that's coming out of these stories, because we do get to see a lot of Regina's journey. We do get to see a lot of Hook's journey. We do get to see a lot of Emma's journey. But they do, every season, feel like we have to start from scratch, and we don't get very far.
It's a lot to wrap your head around and to really, like, process. Like, I love the idea of the whole savior mythology stuff, because it is a side of all of this we haven't seen. But at some point, we have to stop predestining everyone, or we're going to start to wonder why the show even exists. If Snow and Charming are destined to be in love forever and they're always going to find each other, then why are we watching? Like, there's no point. Or if, you know, if Emma's predestined to be the savior, but she will die because she's the savior, then, you know, why are we watching? Same with, like, the bad guys, like, all of the evil ones, there, you know that evil never triumphs in the, you know, in the fairy tale world. They're always brought down somehow. So it's like, yeah, playing with those fairy tale endings slash turning them on their heads has always been Once Upon a Time's biggest strength. So it's like to see them, you know, take the savior mythology down this, you know, if you are the savior, you will die, you know, road. It's unfortunate. I'm hoping that they'll, you know, that somehow another, you know, maybe there's another savior character that will come into play sometime this season and we'll find out that this isn't this, you know, the only way that the saviors live their lives. Hopefully there is some wiggle room here that we just don't know about, but I'm not into the pigeonholing. I definitely agree there.
I definitely understand where everybody is coming from and pretty much agree with you guys, but I think Emma also brings up a good point in this episode when she says, you know, it's us. We're going to find a third option. We're going to find a way to get around this destiny thing. And I think that's where the interest lies. I think that is what Once Upon a Time does well. And yes, we always know that good will triumph over evil. This is, you know, the fairy tale world, and this is just how the show works. I was actually thinking about this earlier. We don't tend to lose too many people along the way when it comes to this show. Kristen and I were talking about The Walking Dead and, you know, who's died and how many people are left over from season one. And you look at a show like Game of Thrones, even, where who knows who's going to die at what time. And then you look at Once Upon a Time and everyone is still here pretty much. I mean, we've lost a few key people, but the big ones have really stuck around. And that's just how the show operates. I don't think that it's necessarily a bad thing, but it is something that makes the show a little bit easier, I think. And when you go into a show like Once Upon a Time, that's just something you kind of have to accept. Yeah, the predestination kind of thing can get frustrating, but I just kind of accept it because it's Once Upon a Time.
I try to give Once Upon a Time too much credit all the time, and that I'm setting myself up for failure in that regard. Like, I think I just need to let Once Upon a Time be a little bit more, give it a little bit more room to do its thing without jumping on it and be like, why aren't you pushing this further? And why aren't you doing that further? Speaking of tiptoeing to storylines and then never actually talking about them, let's go back to the Fates, because I took us there and then completely sidetracked us.
Whoopsie!
That is how my train of thought is working tonight. So these scissors can sever yourself from your fate, and that is what Aladdin chose to do. I like that Aladdin chose to do this and then ran away, because we're not getting the typical, like, you know, we had Merida, I fought for my kingdom and I did this and I stepped up and I persevered. Or you have all these other storylines. We're so used to seeing those storylines that I'm kind of happy we have a storyline that is based on a failure in a sense. Because like we were saying, this is a title that is thrust upon someone. It's not really, you're not born with this destiny that you know about your whole life. It's sort of like, hey, like if I went up to Karen and I'm like, hey, you're going to be a firefighter tomorrow and you're going to be the best firefighter that there ever was, but you're going to have to like run up 40 stories every day with a fire hose now. And that's just how it's going to be. And you're going to come and fight this fire with me right now. And if someone came along to her along the way and was like, you don't have to do this. I don't know what Karen would do. I mean, I'm sure if she thought about it, she might actually want to be a firefighter, but I'm assuming she would consider talking to the random person on the side of the street who tells her that she doesn't have to do it. I don't know. Karen, what do you think?
This is the randomest example, but also I love you so much. This was great. Yeah, I actually totally get that. And I think another thing Once Upon a Time does is thrust heroics onto its characters, and that can be really hard to handle sometimes. I mean, some people, as the saying goes, are born to be heroes, and others have that thrust upon them. And when you're somebody like Aladdin, who has been a thief his entire life, you're like, but really, like, this is a lot of work. Like, I kind of liked the way that things were before. And he likes saving people, and he genuinely was excited to do that. I mean, he went off to go defeat Jafar and all of that, but that's a lot to ask somebody. That's a lot to take on. And if it's between not being the savior anymore, or being the savior and dying and not being the savior, but still being able to help people, like, it doesn't mean, you know, that's been taken away from him. He just doesn't have the magic anymore. I don't blame him for wanting to stay alive. I think that's human instinct. So I don't really think that he's a coward. I think other people would think he's a coward, other characters on the show, but, you know, he just wanted to live, and you kind of can't fault him for that.
Yeah, I should have also included in my example that it would be Odette Fair asking you if you wanted to give up the firefighting routine, so.
Oh, I would say yes in 2 seconds. Whatever you want, Odette Fair.
So, yeah. Should have included that in the example, but I agree. That's why I had a hard time even saying that he could be considered a coward, because I don't think he is at all. The only way I would consider him a coward is the fact that he has been hiding in Storybrooke for, like, how many years? And he's like, oh yeah, Emma, I know you're a sheriff and you keep the town in line. You haven't overheard all this savior nonsense the whole time you're there, and all of a sudden Henry's crying in a crypt and you're like, oh, now I'll tell you what's going on.
Yeah, it's... Oh, I agree.
I'm so angry.
Yeah, it's the inconsistency. It's sort of like the plot line of the week, and they didn't know what to do, and it sounded like a good idea at the time, which kind of annoys me.
Yeah, I mean, I would understand any other curse but the first curse you could have come over. You could have got stuck with the Camelot crew. That even would have made sense, that you didn't come out and talk to anyone. But not the first curse. You've been there since Henry, like, went through his whole life
cycle. You've seen the smoke monsters.
And then you had to go back. At some point, he had to go back and then come back again. So I'm just so confused. Like, he's been through so much and still managed to stay out of the picture. I think that was just sloppy storytelling for a one line. Like, that should have just been cut in post-production to save me a lot of stress. Again, another why for Eddie and Adam whenever I meet them. I'm sure they're dying to meet me.
They're going to be like, oh, Brittany.
They're going to see, like, Hypeable and be like, again. No.
No.
Not anyone from Hypeable but that one.
Oh, God, not her again.
That was really the only plot line in Aladdin's story that, in the present day, that bugged the crap out of me. But I do think it sets up an interesting dynamic for not only Emma and Aladdin to explore, because Aladdin was only really the savior for, like, what, a day and a half? Not even. I don't even think nightfall came. So, you know, Aladdin only really experienced that feeling for about 24 hours, let's say, whereas Emma has had a few years and a lot more experience going through a lot of things. And I think it'll be interesting if they can manage to get the two of them into a room to talk about things. At the end of I'm going to jump ahead a little bit just to the end of the episode, because I thought it was interesting that after Snow and Emma have their, like, you know, obligatory, I'm sorry, I disappointed you, Mom. It's okay, Emma. I still love you. We'll always help you. Your family's here. Conversation, there was what I feel is an unnecessary wrench thrown into the Hook and Emma relationship just for drama's sake, because we've had so many trust issues with these two. I feel like it's just never ending. And my proposal is that I think that this whole projection of distrust and showing trust by giving someone the scissors should have been thrust upon Regina as opposed to Hook. And I'm curious what you guys think, if you like the idea of Hook holding on to the scissors and now he has a one-up on Emma, or if it could have gone a different way, in your opinion.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing, I mean, the other problem I had with the scissors was just the fact that it was, you know, we're just keep going round and round with the honesty, and I'm going to be honest with you, and like, it feels like the fatal flaw of Hook is perpetually his inability to be honest, and we're sort of back at square one here again, right after he lectures her on not being, you know, totally honest, he goes and does the same thing. So that was more of where I had the issue with the scissors, was on this, like, honesty level.
Yeah, but I always seem to find the other side, because
the woman he loves just gave him the only way, the only sure, guaranteed way for her to survive whatever this premonition vision thing is. She hands it to him and says, I trust you. And he, you know, pretends to get rid of it. As far as she knows, they're gone. But is it really, like, the world's worst idea for him to hold on to them and have it as a backup plan? Is it really that bad of an idea? I can't blame him. I mean, I know they've talked about honesty, and I know he's got, you know, this is yet another reason for him to, you know, keep secrets and all of that, which only has caused them trouble before. But, you know, he loves her. And in the end, if there's no other way to save her, I can, you know, I can see it.
I absolutely agree with you. I do not blame Killian for holding on to them one bit, because in his mind, that's the only way that he can save her life, that he can guarantee that she will live. But it's this whole miscommunication trope, it's the whole keeping secrets trope that just drives me crazy. I just hate that he has to hide it from her. And I don't necessarily blame him, or at least I blame him and Emma equally. And it's not even that either one of them are wrong, because I think Emma is doing something very brave. She has decided that she enjoys being the savior so much, she is willing to die in order to save the people of the town, to save her family, to save Hook. And yeah, it's dramatic, but it's noble. And that is the kind of person that she is. And I'm glad that she is that way. She is a hero. But at the same time, I just want more communication. I always want more communication. I want them to talk it out. Doesn't make for a very compelling episode or season when this kind of elevates the drama, but I think considering they've got so much going on already with Regina and just all of this savior business and the person under the hood, like, do we need another conflict in this corner? I think that especially Hook and Emma can be interesting without this kind of conflict, because they're moving in together, and how is that going to change their relationship? I'm much more interested in that side of it than, once again, going back to, I'll save you whether you like it or not, which has been done many times before, and especially last season.
I will say, I would find it, I would actually like it if these scissors were more of a red herring than anything else. Like, I dread the someone gets a hold of them, someone, you know, uses them against Emma, and then Hook has to tell her, and then she's pissed, and, you know, we've had that drama before, at least 3 or 4 times. You know, we don't need that story. But I wouldn't mind if they were a bit of a red herring, where we're always kind of wondering, and we're always kind of worried, and nobody ever comes for them. Like, they never become an issue until Hook needs them. I would love it if there wasn't an evil person that uses them for their own, you know, nefarious purposes.
I put this out there just because it was something, I think it's also because I'm in the midst of a, you know, Swan Queen, Captain Swan ship war in my own personal nightmare on Hypable. So I think, like, I was like, how would this have worked if it was a scene between Emma and Regina? And nothing against the Hook and Emma drama. I live for it. I actually think it's fantastic. I was so excited that he had them in my own twisted way, because yes, it's been done. Yes, it's been repeated. Yes, I'm kind of over this whole miscommunication thing. But it does, like everyone was pointing out, set up that for that what if moment, like what if they need that fail safe plan, and what if Hook does need them and Emma doesn't need to make that sacrifice if they find a way out and the scissors are the only way. At least he has them. I am 1000% in support of the fact that no one comes for them, because I can't deal with it. We've seen that with babies. We've seen that with, like, you know, daggers, and we don't need that plot line again. If they do that, someone fell asleep in the writer's room and forgot all 5 seasons that have already happened of this show. I will, once again, and Once Upon a Time will probably prove me wrong, give the writers a little bit more credit than that, but we'll see how it all plays out. Let's get Zelina and Regina off the table. Still not quite sure what the Evil Queen's end game is. We did learn in this episode that she wants to know what's going on with these visions, and in order to get that information, she not only exposes them via Archie, like taking over Archie's body for herself, but everyone now knows, which is a huge relief. We can really thank the Evil Queen for being around for that one, because it's finally all cards on the table. Then she kind of just takes that information, and that's the end of that. And then she's just trying to, again, woo her sister to accept her wickedness. And I do think that there was some merit to what she was saying about Zelina. You can be evil and your child will accept you. Like, the idea that Zelina is so worried about what her daughter thinks is really touching, but they're going about it the wrong way. So they really do need to bring in the hero reinforcement with Zelina again.
I was going to say, I know there's a lot going on, but does no one want to make a trip out to see how she's doing? Like, nobody? No volunteers? Like, she sits in that little cottage all day by herself. Right. And nobody from the hero crew comes looking. Zelina
seems like such a smart idea, right?
Yeah, like, they just don't seem interested in worrying about her. And then she sneaks up on them and does something nefarious. And they're like, you shouldn't, we've helped you a million times. It's like, if somebody just cared enough to go check on her, I think it could be different.
Also, she's raising a child for the first time ever, alone, yeah, by herself in a cabin. And the last time she was out there by herself, she had someone locked in a basement. So she doesn't have a great track record for being left alone.
Right. Yeah, as we said, it seemed like such a good idea at the time, right? Yeah.
Like, Snow, you know, any mommy tips? Like, go hang out and, you know, take the kids and just go hang out with her, see what's going on. It just seems strange that Regina kind of, you know, throws her out of her house, or Zelina leaves. I forget how that all went down, but she leaves, goes back to her little cabin, and nobody has an interest in her. It just, you know, it seems like a really bad decision.
Devil's advocate here. I also think Zelina needs to put forth effort to becoming good. I think that, you know, Cinderella has that daycare. Why doesn't she go hang out with them? I think that by isolating herself, she's allowing the Evil Queen's thoughts to really permeate her psyche. She's allowing her to talk her into things that I'm not entirely sure Zelina really wants to do. I don't have tons of love for Zelina, and I really don't like what they did with her character originally, but I can kind of forget about that if she truly wants to be good. And I'm really hoping that Zelina is playing a long con here, and that she is trying to get close to the Evil Queen in order to eventually switch sides and help Regina defeat her once and for all.
Some words I never thought I'd say. In defense of Zelina, she's kind of always been a loner. She knows how to be alone. She doesn't know how to be in a group. She doesn't know how to count on people. So I kind of don't blame her for not reaching out as much as I blame this hero squad, you know, for not reaching out to her.
Yeah, absolutely. She has been alone since day one. I mean, she was literally left at a tornado. So she doesn't talk to anyone. She never had friends, really. And she, the only person she got close with died. And so she's still, like, kind of in mourning for that. And she's also sitting by herself rehashing Robin's death and what thinking, like, oh, Regina probably thinks that I, like, you know, I'm responsible for all of this. And no one's going there. And yeah, it could be annoying to hear, you know, the heroes constantly being like, hey, you know, no, like, we're all moving through this together. But they're not moving through it together. They've given up, sort of, not given up, but forgot about her, because the show is trying so hard to make her such an ingrained part of the series, but they are isolating her, whether intentionally or not. It's working in their favor now that it was intentional, because we get to see her grow so far apart that I'm not sure that a pep talk from it, either Regina even, would, you know, persuade her to change what she's thinking. So the Wicked Witch is back again. I'm sure we'll see much more of her.
one other thing. I am also hoping she is pulling a long con here and is trying to get in the Evil Queen's good graces just to use it against her. I think it would be the best story idea for Selena because they have never trusted her. And for her to just turn around and be like, bam, here's everything you need to know. It would be like a total upheaval from everything she's ever done. Mm-hmm. So I'm crossing my fingers for that, but I don't know where we're going.
No, I like that idea a lot. And I would hope that they could pull that off because it is something, you know, she hasn't fully given herself over yet. She hasn't denounced Regina at all because when she is sitting across from the Evil Queen, she is looking at Regina too. Like that, there's no, like, it's not a different face. It's got a little bit more makeup on, but, you know, there is that constant reminder that it is Regina. I just want to talk about Sean McGuire really quickly because he's coming back soon-ish. And in some recent interviews, they said that he's not coming back in flashback. And
so how does that work exactly?
That's exactly what I want to speculate with you guys because the interview was actually for Timeless, which Laura covers for Hypeable, and he was on tonight. And he asserts in the interview that his character is dead and is going to remain dead. But his reappearance will provide some closure for Regina and sort of just give Robin the proper farewell that he thinks that fans deserve. And he was really specific in talking with Eddie and Adam about his involvement coming back. And the fact that it's not flashbacks is just boggling my mind because,
like,
you know,
do they go back to the underworld? Like, how does that, like, I don't even know how that works. Like, I legitimately have no idea how that works.
And I would think if, like, you were killed with the Olympian, like, crystal-y thing, like, you don't
go to the underworld.
You don't go to the underworld. So I'm curious, like, I don't know how it's going to happen. Maybe it's that feather, you know, that feather is coming back through the feather or something, but
maybe the Fate, since we've got the whole scissory thing, maybe it has something to do with them and, like, it wasn't supposed to be his fate, so they make an exception and, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's also speculation, not speculation, I think this is a fact, that that dragon guy is coming back as well, the one that Regina killed, or the Evil Queen killed in New York City. So, you know, maybe he has something to do with this. Like, they've met each other in dust form and were able to revive magic enough to make him come back. Sort of like how Neil was able to separate himself from Rumple long enough to send that magic dove relay a message a few seasons ago. I always think about that when I think about convenient ways of getting people to come back to the show. That drove me crazy. Yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there as something to keep in mind as we're moving forward in Once Upon a Time, because I'm curious to see how they're going to make it happen without flashbacks and what kind of craziness is going to justify him being there for not only one episode, like, he's in, like, a couple.
Wow. Are we going to pull a Harry Potter and he gets a talking portrait?
Oh, that would be so great.
Oh, my gosh.
And he only can deliver his lines in one pose. He can't move.
Oh, God.
He's, like, just standing there holding a bow and arrow, looking, and, like, can only, like, you know, nut, go move with his eyes if someone's in the room or something. Oh, that'd be so great. All right, next week we are on episode 6, Dark Waters, and the preview was so promising because it's just Hook being, you know, enticed by Captain Nemo aboard the Nautilus, and they're going to go 20,000 leagues under the sea. I'm excited for the storyline because I think the Captain Nemo story is fascinating. I love 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. It turns out, I read the synopsis, I was hoping it would be like a bottle episode, like we just take Hook and we put him underwater for a whole episode, but we're not doing that. It is a flashback to a time when Hook gets kidnapped and he has to work for Captain Nemo. And then we're also going to address the Evil Queen is going to try and break up Hook and Henry from their father-son bonding. Gold is back again. How nice was it not to have Rumple at all this week, guys? How wonderful did everyone feel? Oh, it was a huge selling point for me. When I was typing up the doc, I was like, I do not have to talk about them at all. And I'm happy about it. Yeah, but we get more Aladdin, we get more Jasmine. yeah, we're doing some things with Archie. I'm kind of glad Archie's sticking around a little bit. For a while, I thought that he, because of his pushiness with Emma, I was starting to think that he was in cahoots with the evil queen. But now, like, that they took an easier way out than my convoluted plan of him being an undercover agent. So.
Well, and part of me was going, doctor patient privilege much? And I'm like, oh, no, it's like fake Archie. Like, I was just like, would they not know that? I was starting to question if they would question that was out of character for Archie. Plus the cricket thing. It's like they made him a bug again. Really? Be nice to the cricket.
We'll see. We'll see what's gonna happen. I was really, really hoping for just a whole Hook underwater episode so we'd have just nothing but good things to say. But yeah, so until next week, we'll be back. And I'm Brittany.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Laura. Bye.
Bye.
I'm looking at all the stills for next week, and Hook is wet in all of them.